Welcome to the most inappropriate book club you never knew you were missing. Featuring at least three different books every week. Starring Martha Steele, the weirder the book, the better. Vonnie Golden, historical fiction with a side of trauma porn. Keith Steigert, reading the books your mother warned you about. Megan Runyon, reading YA and whatever her current fixation is. Pat Griner, refusing to read by the rules, as a rule. These people are passionate about books, maybe a little too passionate. Plotting world domination, one book at a time, they are three book girls.
Bless your heart.
Don't bless your heart. Patronizing. Be blessing hearts.
Oh, sugar, let me tell you how this goes.
I said bless your heart is not a complimentary thing.
No, it is not.
Yeah. Keith, you weren't here last week, so I saved it for you because you are like the only other person in this group that would understand this conversation. Did you see that Miss Colleen Hoover has once again stepped in it big?
No.
So what's the book that everybody was mad that she had the coloring book?
It Ends With Us.
Ends With Us had the coloring book, and everyone's like, we're not having a book or coloring book based on a book that features domestic violence. And she was like, yeah, you're probably right. So then she turns around and releases a nail polish that's all the colors that are like of the book. She just needs to stop trying to do things with this book.
You think it's her?
I don't know if it's her.
Personally, I really don't.
I would think not. Her company's so big at this point, but it's still like at the end of the day, her name on it. Because it's all.
Does she have? Here's my question. Does Colleen Hoover have teenage daughters?
I don't know.
Older than that.
Oh.
Well, actually, no. I think she has sons.
Oh.
And they're older than teenagers. Oh. They're like young. They're like adults.
I was going to say that totally sounds like a marketing plan made up by teenage daughters.
I think some of it, I think people are like looking for something to be mad at her about.
I think the nail polish thing is because her books are insanely popular now in like middle schools and high schools.
Yeah.
Like amongst tweens, like the Sephora crowd kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's why they're. But yeah, she hasn't written anything in a while, and yet she has had like seven books on the bestseller list at a time. So I think they're just trying to capitalize off of her name recognition.
Agreed.
Right now.
Yeah. I'm trying to look what the like line was called.
Did you know she canceled her book conventions?
Did she really?
She has one this year, and she announced maybe last month that this will be the last one. Even though they had dates announced all the way up to like 2027, I think.
Oh, the line is called It Starts With Beautiful Nails. I'm not really. I feel like someone just didn't sit in a room and like think it through.
And I guess if you don't have any idea what Colleen Hoover's books are about, like I'm sitting over here going, I don't see what the big deal is.
Yeah, I don't have a clue because I've never read one of her books. And
so why is it bad?
I think it's because
It Ends With Us is basically about like her mother was in an abusive relationship when she and her sisters were growing up. And so she's always been. It's pretty well known that her mom was like the
inspiration
basis for the book, but like they don't know if it was their dad or if it was like a, like, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And that only came about because I know she bought, like, when she made it big with that book and she got a lot of money for it, she bought, the first thing she did was buy her mom a car, and then she paid off her mortgage and all this stuff. And so I think she might have said something off the cuff, like, well, you know, like, it was because of my mother that book even exists.
Oh.
And she tries to be really, really private.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think it's real hard because she's super popular. And I don't know, she strikes me as the kind of person that she does not seem very social. Like, she struggles, I think, with that. So I honestly don't think she's trying to make more money. I mean, she gives so much money to charity and stuff. Like, yeah. I think it's probably, and I want to say it's Atria that's her book publishing company.
I think that sounds right, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, it is Atria. I think she, like, I'm seriously trying to, like, I'm trying to think when her last book came out. And it's been a while. So, I mean, she hasn't written anything in a while.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this is how they, you know, I don't know.
Trying to keep it alive so people will keep buying books.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It would, the people's reaction to it, especially because when you think like about that book kind of being about what it's about and you're saying it begins with beautiful nails.
Yeah.
Like it just was not well.
You know what it reminds
me
of a little bit? It reminds me a little bit of the Bud Light debacle. It was a great idea.
Which one?
To be inclusive.
Oh, with Dylan Mulvaney.
Yes.
Yeah.
It really didn't fit the whole situation very well.
Yeah. I think if maybe they had picked a different book to base the title of the collection on and maybe a different color scheme, because she's got a lot of color, like blues and like a lot of other colors.
It Starts With Us isn't a tale, isn't a story about abuse. It's the prequel when they have a good relationship. So if they base it off of It Starts With, maybe that's what they were trying to do.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Okay. See, okay. That's why I was like, I don't understand how they could have gotten it so wrong.
Yeah. But then you know where the story ends with the other one. So maybe that's why people are like, like we're starting a pipeline and it's not a good pipeline.
But you know what? I'll tell you what. I'm very jaded. And I think some of the people on TikTok and social media, I honestly think they just look for stuff.
Yeah. True. True.
If Twilight wasn't a huge deal, there wouldn't be so many people against Twilight and spouting off like crap about, you know what I mean?
That's
if
valid.
Twilight was just a book that a lot of people liked.
Yeah.
But I mean, as you get bigger, people feel like they need to take you down. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, yeah, I don't know. I used to love being on TikTok, but now with TikTok Shop, with all the people that are just like trying to spout negativity and shit. I mean, there are just as many people that just go on there to say, don't read this book because this and this other thing and this other thing, as there are people being like, oh, this book is really good. I've read it. Go read it. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's
more like people are, I guess some of the book controversies, I feel like get stirred up without any real basis. And then some of the controversies that are actual, like you never hear about, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Valid. I do think also right now nail polish brands are very trendy.
Oh, yeah.
Like Harry Styles has his own. There's so many people that have their own nail polish brand that it wouldn't surprise me that an author that typically is like female focused would be like, oh, I should have a nail polish brand. I think they just missed the marketing mark when the coloring book kind of hit a wall and then they still were like, we're still going to try. And they just didn't.
And remember, she's still got that movie coming out in the summer.
Yes.
So there's going to be so much shit that people are going to, you know what I mean?
And Blake Lively's in that, right? Like, it's a star-studded cast. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I went to her book convention in July, last July, she was already, like, getting so much stuff about... I haven't read the book, honestly, yet, because I know it's really sad. So I know all about what it's about, but I haven't read it yet. But, like, somebody in the movie was wearing clothing that they... didn't I think like Blake Lively's character dresses in a way that everybody who read the book thought was wrong, and she got a lot of shit about it.
Oh.
And just really weird stuff like that, like with The Vampire Diaries.
Oh, Elena's, you know, hair's, I mean, the wrong color.
If that had been a more popular book series, they would have gotten so much shit because they completely flip-flopped the characters and what they were supposed to look like.
That's still,
you know, what I
mean? that's why, like, I've that never kind of read the books, because I started reading and I was like, Caroline has brown hair and Elena has blonde. And I was like, nope, they sure don't. And I couldn't get past it. So, yeah, I agree with that. The Oscars are this weekend.
And it's spring ahead weekend.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, it is.
So it's going to be even. Oh, my God.
Oh, man, that's a terrible day to have the Oscars on the day we lose an hour.
It really is.
And then you're like, let me give you
a 7. That's why they started at 7.
Yeah, that's probably exactly why they started at 7. $5.
You know, I was gonna schedule our Patreon call.
No.
And the last time I did that, nobody wanted to come because it was Oscar night.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm not scheduling it this time.
Oscars, man. We have to watch. We have to look and see how Lily Gladstone does and how, you know.
I haven't seen
Barbie get creamed by Oppenheimer.
Yep.
I know, right?
I've only seen one of the movies, I think. Did you know that the Metro Library has a service that allows you to stream Oscar-nominated movies?
Say what now?
Yeah.
Bullshit. They don't share that.
Canopy?
Yep.
They have that at the library here, too.
Wait, what is it? What is it called?
Canopy. It's a part of the... I just found this out. I mean, like...
Hot damn.
2 days ago. I haven't had the chance to watch any of them. The thing that I love about libraries is they continually evolve.
Yeah.
With the technology. So they've got all kinds of, I mean, you can watch the great courses on there. Like if you want to educate yourself.
That's kind of cool.
All kinds of different options. There's a streaming platform that's something else that's on there. I don't know. Can't think of it right now. Where are the book Oscars? That's what I need to know.
This is
bullshit that we've never got a good Oscars awards for the books.
Okay, well, technically Oppenheimer's based on the book written about Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I know, but...
Which was given, fun fact, because, you know, there's like this theory that like Twilight exists because, no, this is going somewhere. Listen, Martha's rolling her eyes. So that the theory is that like the Twilight exists because 9/11 happened, because I can't think of the band, but there's a band that Stephanie Meyer listened to that was formed after 9/11. And it was like music about his dad. And then that was a band that Stephanie Meyer listened to while she was writing Twilight. So if there had been no 9/11, that band wouldn't exist. And then there would be no Twilight. This ties into Oppenheimer because
people are going to be listening to this podcast and getting drunk every time we say Twilight.
Good. Drink up, bitches. But then, okay, so because we have Twilight, we have Robert Pattinson. And because we have Robert Pattinson, who is Batman to Christopher Nolan in Batman, he gave Christopher Nolan as a gift at a rap party the Oppenheimer book.
American Prometheus?
Yes.
Ah.
And so Robert Pattinson is why Christopher Nolan had American Prometheus in his hand to make Oppenheimer.
He might have read it anyway.
We'll never know, will we?
No, guess not.
Ha! So there you go.
I don't understand how Stephanie Meyer wouldn't have just listened to a different band and wrote Twilight.
Agree.
She could have.
1,000%.
She could have, but we'll never know because she had. What is that band?
You can think about it while we talk about something else, for Christ's sakes.
All right.
Now that we have the conspiracy theory of the year.
It's not a conspiracy theory. It's fact.
It just sounds like conspiracy theory the way you're where you were presenting it, Megan. Sounded
It's not a conspiracy
insane.
Theory when it's fact.
It still sounds insane. So sometimes you find yourself in need of being a good person by supporting your local podcast.
Or maybe just in need of some more book content.
That too. But, you know, supporting us is important.
It is important. We like to pay our bills for the podcast. They're not paying our electric bill by any means to keep this show running.
So we really appreciate our current Patreon members. But you know what? The club's just not quite big enough yet.
We could use a few more of you. We would love to have you join us. We have several tiers of membership, which gives you different access to different things. We have some monthly Zoom calls. We're doing some extra content this year. We're kicking off some new and exciting things coming your way. I'm not even going to give you teasers because we haven't named them all yet.
It's too new.
It's too new. But we do have a plan on paper to give you more content. So go to patreon.com and search 3 Book Girls and... subscribe today for more of this mayhem in your life. We know
you need
that you
us.
Need it.
You know you do. You need more. Please be our Patreons. So tell me about you're going to Italy, right?
Spain and Italy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Spain.
7 days in Spain, 3 days in Italy. Heck, I've got people who know their way around over there and are willing to let me tag around with them for 10 or 11 days. I will never have this chance again.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we will be expecting some photographs of people reading in the wild while you're in Spain. We need some European book girl photographs. That's your assignment.
So we posted a TikTok of us eating Pizza Hut, tagging Pizza Hut, saying, like, hook us up. In the comments, everyone is like, I third this. Yes, I was literally talking about this on Friday. Yes, I'm in. Yes, Pizza Hut. You know they're right. Get them some free pizza, Pizza Hut.
Because that's what we had for dinner. So we were sitting in here talking about the good old days when we used to get personal pan pizzas for reading books.
Oh, yeah.
So then we tagged Pizza Hut and they answered us.
Well, they liked our reel on Instagram. Yeah. They haven't responded to our TikTok, but it has 400 views already.
It must have hit a nerve.
Free pizza for reading books?
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't have Book It? Was Book It before
it
Pat?
Was, it we'll was, do that.
Yeah, it was after my time.
As a kid at school, it was like a whole program. And when you would read a book, you would get like, there was a button, at least in my school, it was a button. And when you finished a book, you got a star on the button. And when you filled the button, you could go to Pizza Hut and like cash in your button and that you would get a free personal pizza and like a drink. And it was called Book It.
Nice.
And it was my generation's like cocaine.
Because you got pizza
like,
for reading
the
books.
Book It. They do have a Book It, what they call a Book It bundle now on their app, but it's not the same. You don't have to earn it.
Well, everybody lied about that shit anyway.
Get one large, one topping pizza plus an order of breadsticks and a dollar from your Book It bundle will be donated to a nonprofit organization that focuses on literacy.
Well, we are a profit organization that focuses on literacy.
Yeah, but that's kind of a cool way to do too. They're still donating to literacy.
True.
So we'll give it to them.
The Book It program is still going strong after 40 years. So apparently it's still a thing.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
But adults can't play.
Now, pre-K through sixth grade.
Adults need to be able to play too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want my button and I want my gold star, damn it.
Okay. We got
to
move
Bring
on.
Bring books to the world.
Yes. All right, Bonnie, what do we have?
So are we going to go straight from pizza to murder?
No.
Yeah, let's do it.
That seems appropriate.
It does. I would murder for some pizza.
There's some pizza right over there. You don't have to kill anyone.
She just wants to kill someone. That's what her deal is.
I mean, she is over there reading a book that says something about murdering your employees.
Yep. Coming soon to this podcast, what that book is.
I kind of want to borrow that when you're done. Do you have one that says killing your coworkers? Because...
No, I don't have that one.
It's kind of been one of those weeks.
It might be the sequel.
It was either donuts or a machete, and I chose donuts.
Probably a good choice. Our bank account is not big enough to bail you out.
Yeah, I was going to say. I don't think we have a lawyer on retainer at the moment.
Security wouldn't even let me bring in a bread knife the week that I brought rolls. I'm thinking a machete would not make it through. So the book I read this week was recommended to me by our book friend, Brittany.
Hey, Brittany!
Shout out, Brittany. And she said that this was the book that she reviewed when she was on our podcast, like in 2016.
That was a long time.
She was the first guest.
She was the very first guest.
She's the very first guest. And she's still with us, and she's a Patreon member. Thank you, Brittany.
And thank you, Brittany, for not being a psycho, because Martha was just like, come on up, spend the night. Come out to the country down this dirt road with us.
The origin of pizza night.
It is called Killing Harvest by Paul Cleave. And it is a mystery, not a historical fiction.
Look at you branching out and whatnot.
I know. And to be fair, though, me and Brittany exchanged books. She told me to read this one, and I told her to read Unbroken. This book is very interesting. I'm trying to think how exactly it starts out. I think it starts out with cops, partners, are going to question, I'm going to say, quote, unquote, question a suspect in a murder case. They don't call for backup. They're not exactly going by the book.
Ruh-roh.
And there's kind of a teaser on something that's going on also, but they reveal it pretty early in the book. So they're going to this construction site to go question this suspect. So they get there and they ask about him and they go up in this construction site. I won't lie, I was kind of skimming this part a little bit because it was a boring. And the suspect, how do I put this? He basically tries to fight back, take off. He's obviously guilty. They get into a scuffle. They still haven't called for backup, though.
I love good scuffle.
Like, huh. He ends up pushing one of the cops out the, I'm going to say window, but it just was a sheet of plastic, pushing him out and killing him. Ben, who's the other cop, obviously is not very happy about it, chases the guy down, beats the shit out of him, and then shoots him.
That's a bit excessive.
Yeah, that might
But there's a reason why they do this, and I'm going to go ahead and reveal it since it's very early in the book.
Okay.
So it's not really a spoiler, but these cops kind of have a deal with a doctor that harvests organs.
They're the modern day Burke and Hare?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So they're basically killing bad guys. And I mean, they are the bad guys. Of course, they're not convicted. So I'm going to say quote unquote bad guys. And using their organs, they're manipulating the records to make it look like they've signed up to be organ donors.
Oh shit.
After they've already killed them and taken them to the hospital.
Damn.
And that's why they need the doctor. And I'm sure the doctor has other people working for him because it wouldn't just be, you know.
Okay. So they're not quite Burke and Hare, because Burke and Hare just took the whole body.
Go back to the cop who died. His name was Mitch. He has a son named Joshua who's blind. And way before they even went to go talk to the suspect or whatnot, he had already written in his last requests that Joshua be given his eyes as a transplant.
Oh,
so that he can see.
You have your daddy's eyes.
Oh, why did you have to say it like that?
But
sorry, I couldn't help it.
No, but does he?
Oh,
because after Joshua gets his eyes, Joshua starts having dreams.
Mm-mm.
And he's having dreams now, of his dad killing the bad guy, but also of the bad guy killing his dad, and also of other images of women and parts and lots of blood.
Mm.
And so, you know, he's confused by this and everything, and it's something called cell memory. And it gets pretty fucked up after that.
Don't mince your words, Bonnie. God. I hate it when you just glaze over things.
But, well, I don't want to give too much away.
No.
I mean, that all of that stuff happens very early in the book. That's the only reason why I'm going this far. But it kind of goes into trying to keep the secret of what Ben has done and about Joshua going from being blind to being able to see. He has to change schools. He's kind of a misfit. And while he's dealing with trying to fit into the new seeing world, he's also having these dreams of killings and all of this other stuff. And investigations start. Somebody else is trying to kill Ben. The killer who they killed at the construction site has a best friend who's out for vengeance to rectify his best friend's killing. And he's a pretty fucked up dude too. Dude is strange. Very, very strange. But it was a really good book. It had twists and turns. There was something that happened right in the middle. And I know Brittany will know what I'm talking about, that I was like, you better fucking not. Just better not be where this is going.
And it does.
I can't tell you that. You have to read it. But if I had a real book, it would have been in the freezer because I was very afraid.
There you go. Can't put your phone in the freezer very
now,
well.
Now, especially when you listen to it in the car.
Yeah.
Throw my phone out the window. Out the window.
Driving down 40, there's just phones flying out windows.
Go to the Apple store. I need to cash in my warranty. What happened to your phone? I was reading a really good book. But it's great. It's suspenseful. I kind of halfway figured it out, but not quite all the way. There's a little bit of a twist near the end of the book, but it was really good. I liked it. Now, is everything 100% accurate? Probably not, but enough that it didn't bother me.
I think we left accurate behind it. My eyeballs see what my dad saw.
Cellular memory could be a thing, right? I didn't Google it, so I don't know. I'm not an expert in medical field.
I think it's a little bit like astrology at this point. Nobody knows for sure. Nobody knows.
Astrology is real. Okay, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, whatever, Miss Leo over there.
And that again was A Killing Harvest by Paul Cleave.
Who's next?
Did you guys see that they finally made the movie out of that Killer Harvest book that one of you guys reviewed for Spooky Month?
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, it's creepy as fuck.
Ooh.
Oh, wait, I did see that. Was it called November?
I reviewed that, I think.
It's called A Killer Harvest.
Killer Harvest, yeah.
Okay.
So cool. I got to go watch it now. Keith.
So the book that I'm going to review is called The Wrong Bride by Katharina Mora.
This already sounds awesome.
So a lot of times I don't read books for like the realism that they bring exactly. This book is kind of like, it honestly, not in the things that happen, but it reminds me of, like, sometimes my husband and I will like to just tune in to Days of Our Lives because we used to watch it like in our youth and when we were in college and stuff, and we haven't seen it since then. And we're like, who the hell is that? Who is that? What is, wait, Marlene is going to be possessed by the devil again? They did that 30 years ago.
God, I loved that. I loved it when they did that.
Hope's been in a coma for 12 years. We don't know what's happened.
Wait a minute. That's Hope's like great grandson? How? Like,
I know nothing about that
35.
Show, but I know Hope was in a coma for a long time.
Yeah. This book has all that weird drama. I couldn't take it very seriously, but I don't need to do that to like be encaptured in the book. And I honestly, so this is part of a series, and this is the first book in the series, and it's my favorite one. I started reading the series, honestly, because I got the book, like the third book in the series, free somewhere. And this series is just so funny to me, and it's probably not supposed to be, but I love it. This is about a family, the Windsor family, and they are super, super rich. And they got that way by like, they own companies in like every division that could possibly exist. And there are 6 kids and they're all adults. And so like, I think they started in finance. So they've got this banking conglomerate empire. And then they got into real estate. So they're a huge real estate entity. And then they also got into production. So they like make movies and do TV shows and stuff. And each kid is in charge of one of the subgroups, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And at the center of it is this grandmother. All the kids' parents died like when they were young in a plane crash. And this grandmother is this family matriarch. And in the family, they have always had arranged marriages. So the kids have grown up knowing this, like their parents had an arranged marriage. And one of the ways they get all these different companies is they facilitate these marriages so that, you know, 2 companies will merge, basically.
Oh, that's kind of different.
It's like Dallas.
Yeah.
Or Dynasty. I can't remember which. And the eldest brother, it's time for him to get married. Now, his arranged marriage was set up 5 years ago. And his name is Eris. And he was set up to get married to this woman named Raven. And she was his younger sister's best friend. Mm-hmm. So they were... The brother and her get along really well. Like the whole family like treats her like family. She comes over. They're like the kind of family that does Sunday dinners and stuff, like a Gilmore Girls kind of thing, like because they're rich. And oh, and they live in this compound. So there's like one house. And then if you go down a really long hallway, they each have mansions at the end of the hallway.
Oh my God.
They all like live near each other. And it's like literally... Dude, it's just so funny to picture. So this is the first arranged marriage. The kids are all fine with it. Like, they're like, okay, yeah. So they announce on this girl, this woman Ravens. It's her 21st birthday party, and they announced that this is going to be the arranged marriage, like, sometime in the future. And it's going to be for Raven and Ares. Well, the day after her party, he goes to his grandmother and is like, hey, I really like her older sister, and I want to have my arranged marriage be to her. So they've, like, announced it to the families, like, everybody knew, but the grandmother is like, it's her first time, like, arranging a marriage with her grandkids, and she's like, okay, well, that's fine. It's, like, the same family, and it does the same thing, but she wanted her to marry the younger daughter because the younger daughter is close with all of them, and they wanted her in the family kind of thing. Now, Raven's older sister, Hannah, is, like, this big-time movie star, which, I mean, is fine because the oldest brother, Eris, is in charge of the production company, so it kind of works. The sad thing is, though, that the younger sister, Raven, has been in love with him since she was, like, 10.
Aww.
Right? So Hannah and Eris have been dating for 6 years, and they're finally supposed to get married. Hannah keeps putting the marriage off, because all the marriages have these weird rules. Let's see if I can remember all the weird rules. The marriages happen because the kids won't get their inheritances unless they go through with the arranged marriages. They have to be married for 3 years. In those 3 years, they can't spend more than 2 nights not sleeping in the same bed.
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, so it can't be like a fake marriage. Like, there are all these rules that make sure that, like, you have to actually cohabitate with this person.
Who's going to keep track of that shit, though?
Grandma.
Yeah. Dude, grandma. It's crazy. Like, they could probably get away with stuff here and there, but, and they have, like, servants because they're rich and stuff. So, like, the servants are spying on them and stuff, course. I guess. But, so... the marriage is finally happening, and Raven is the maid of honor. So she has to, and Hannah is kind of like, she's too busy being famous and this actress to do any of her own wedding stuff. So Raven has been doing everything. So she has had to plan her older sister's wedding to the guy of her dreams, who she's been in love with since she was 10. And then, like, she doesn't come home for holidays anymore because her bedroom is right next to her sister's bedroom. So she hears them, like, at night. So she hasn't come home to spend time with her family in forever. She goes to all these great lengths to, and yet she's friends with the guy, Eris. So, like, he'll call her up and be like, hey, can you take me? I need to find a birthday present for your sister. Let's go shopping. And so she's gone through this torment for, like, 5 years.
No, oh, poor
Naris has no idea. And he's just like, oh, I love Hannah. I'm going to talk about her all the time to this poor girl that loves me. So 2 weeks before the wedding, Hannah is like, guess what? I got this amazing role in this movie, and they need to start shooting it. So I'm going to go do that, and we're going to postpone the wedding. And and this is the third time they postponed the wedding. And the grandmother is like, no more. We're not doing it anymore. This is it. And Hannah is like, I'm going to totally call their bluff. I'm not going to go. And she keeps telling them, I'm not going to go to the wedding. So the grandma is like, okay, well, if you don't come, he'll get married to your younger sister.
Hannah's
like laughing. And she's like, no, that'll never happen. My sister's not going to marry him.
Wrong.
So Hannah and Raven's family have this smaller production company. Like, say he's Warner Brothers and they're like, I don't know. That was stupid because I don't know any companies. Like some small, like, crap. I don't even know. Dreamscape thing. Like a small thing that they, and Warner Brothers wants to accumulate them, and their family's like kind of small fish, and they really need grandma to allow them to get together, because grandma's going to give so much funding to this little company to bring them up to her level so that they can join. And they need this funding. And so they're like, so they say, basically say to the little sister, they're like, hey, you have to do this. Otherwise, we're going to be destitute. They're going to pull all their funding. We're not going to and we'll have to go bankrupt, all this crap, right? So the day of the wedding comes and everybody's standing up there and no one knows who's going to get married to him.
Oh, man.
And it turns out to be the little sister because Hannah and I come back. So now they're married and Hannah comes back the next freaking day. It's like, okay, I didn't actually think you would do it.
Jesus.
And that's like the book. Like the whole book is about how these two people are married now. And like Raven's kind of like, woo, this would be cool if it was a real marriage. And Aries is, okay, the woman I've been sleeping with for 6 years, her little sister, I'm like married to her now. And how awkward is this? Because she was supposed to be my sister-in-law and now she's my wife. And dude, it's so funny.
Sounds great.
It's like so great.
It sounds like
it's so dramatic. And that's why I'm saying, it's kind of like Days where you're watching and then something will happen. You're like, you gotta be kidding me. No. But you're also like, oh my God, did that happen? So the whole book, I kind of wanted to smack someone next to me and like be like, what? Now this is happening? I mean, it was so totally not realistic at all. And so it has all these bad reviews because of this.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm like, I thought it was great. I mean, yeah.
It sounds fun. And
it's such a crazy premise. It is so crazy. Like, they have to do all these weird shit. Like, they have to sleep in the same bed. And Raven is like, I want to make this into a real marriage. So I'm going to wear see-through nighties and stuff to bed. And her sister is like, come on, we're going to steal him away from Hannah. And Hannah keeps coming to house being like, okay, but you're not really married. So we should go, like, she's like, hey, can I go out on a date with Aries? And Aries is like, no, I don't think you can. I'm married. And he knows he could be just married for 3 years and then divorce her and get his inheritance. But they were raised in such a way that I guess they're like, marriage is forever, which I don't understand at all. Because, I mean, it's just so funny.
Especially if it's arranged.
It just keeps happening. Like, each book is just like, I'm like, Grandma, how can you fuck this up so badly? Like, And then at the end, everybody's happy. If this was a reality show, because I know they have those, like 90 Second Fiancé or whatever the hell they are, I would be horrified. But because this is a fiction book, I was so completely entertained. So yeah, this is not Seabiscuit or anything.
Oh my gosh.
But if you think it's hysterical that this poor dude ends up married to this woman who like is madly in love with him and he's like in love with her sister and it's like, how did we end up married? What the hell is happening? This book was hysterical. I mean, some of it is sad, but even in its sadness, it's like, you're kidding. And so many weird things come up throughout their attempt at this marriage. It's just phenomenal.
I love it.
I really liked it. Again, this is not going to win a Pulitzer for best, but I mean, it was truly an escape. And as soon as I read the third one, I was like, oh, okay, this isn't bad. And then I read the synopsis and I was like, wait, when her sister doesn't show up on her wedding day, Raven has no choice but to take her sister's place. I was like, well, I'm totally reading that shit. Again, that was The Wrong Bride by Katharina Mora. And it's hysterical.
Awesome. I guess Megan gets to go next.
So this week, I am reviewing Murder Your Employer by Rupert Holmes. This is what I would just consider a fiction book. And we have
I hope so.
Well, yeah, it's not like a crime drama.
A how-to?
Yeah. It's a confession.
Yeah, it's not like well, because it's not, it's definitely not YA, but it's not. So yeah.
Okay, can I say real quick, when I said that during my review, I thought that was like a work self-help kind of book thing. I didn't know it was an actual.
No, actual fiction. Title. Actual fiction. Murder Your Employer. So we have the three main characters of our story. We have Cliff, Gemma, and Dora. And we kind of meet Cliff first. So Cliff is really mad at his boss because his boss is, they design airplanes. This is like post-World War II. So it's not like modern times. So they design airplanes and Cliff is like kind of the brainchild of the engineering. And then his boss is like, oh, if we take out this thing, then we can, you know, when it breaks, then they're gonna have to pay us to fix it. And Cliff is like, or you're gonna kill a lot of people on a plane. And so he's pretty mad. And his boss is,
so he works for Boeing.
Kinda. Kind of the same.
I was thinking that.
Yeah, kinda works for Boeing. And his boss is like a womanizer and he like is just a dick. And so Cliff is like, well, you know, this guy's such an asshole, I should just kill him. And he has like not a terrible plan. So he dresses up in like a fat suit, kind of makes himself unrecognizable, figures out how to like lure his boss to the train station.
It sounds like a caper.
It kind of is, but not at all. So he figures out how to lure his boss to the train station. And then he's like, I'm going to shove him off the platform and let him get run over by a train, and then the world will be fine because this piece of dirt is gone. Well, he shoves him and runs off. So he's like, cool, boss is dead. Boss isn't dead. Like, 2 minutes later, there's like a knock on his door, and it's like two police officers, and he's like, they're like, hey, bro, so did you just try to shove your boss off the tracks? And he was like, shit. And then this is like the catalyst moment. We discover that these police officers are not actually police officers. They work for McMaster. And McMaster is a secret college for assassins, kind of. And it's very exclusive.
You suck as an assassin. You need to go to college.
100%. Literally. That is literally the definition of this place. And so, and he's one of, like, most people, like, know that they want to, because they go in with their quote-unquote thesis, which is, like, here's the one person that I want to eliminate, and they call it deleting, because they don't ever want to say the word murder. They want to say they're deleting them.
This totally sounds like a book I would read.
I don't know if you would like this one, Martha. I'm not sure. I really have enjoyed it. And so they blindfold you. They drive you around. You don't know where the hell you are for like 2 days. So you don't know where McMaster is. And you go to school and learn how to kill somebody without getting caught. And mind you, it's like the 1940s, 50s. So it's not like DNA is a thing. Like, they know fingerprints are a thing. You know, they know kind of basics, but it's not like trying to do it in 2020 or, you know, in the 2020s. And so they go to all these classes on like how to get away with murder, basically. And so we have Cliff, which is, he's trying to, and they're all trying to murder most likely a boss. That's why it's Murder Your Employer. And then Gemma has a boss at the hospital who is always taking credit for the work that Gemma does. So Gemma's like, I hate you, I want you dead. And they have to like write a thesis. Like, they have to write and answer like four questions. Like, is this person, like, will the world be a better place if this person is dead? How many people will this person's death affect? Like, there's like four questions that they have to be able to answer before they quote unquote graduate and are allowed to go execute the plan.
Execute
the plan. And then we have Dora. I think that's how you say it. So she has like multiple names in the book because she is actually like a famous Hollywood starlet who is undercover kind of at the school because, you know, she couldn't be a Hollywood starlet and be like murdering people. But her target that she would like to delete, I think they call them executives even. I don't think they call them targets. Like, they have all these different names. And her person is like the head of the studio that she's contracted to, because he is just making her life hell. Like, he's not giving her roles and like all that stuff. So this whole thing is them kind of learning how to murder somebody and get away with it. And they have the end of the year track meet, which is almost like a giant Hunger Games, where you get like a tube, and the tube tells you either you're the hunted or the hunter, and you could be hunting somebody and somebody could be hunting you, and they don't actually get to like kill anyone. Like, it's like a get to the point where you've found your target, and then you like go like bingo, like got you. But it's all like so that they can test using their skills. And it's a really fun book, and you kind of laugh because you're like, this is so bizarre yet so great, because you're just like along for the ride. The most of the book is told, so Cliff is a scholarship student because they felt like he had some moxie, right? Because he tried to delete his person without any formal training. So he has like a scholarship, and so he has to keep a journal for his sponsor. So most of the book, when it's from Cliff's perspective, just says like from Cliff's journal, and it's him talking to his sponsor that paid all of his tuition, because it's very expensive school. Like, it's not like a like cheap school, so you have to have some funds to try to learn how to murder your employer. And yeah, it's a great ride. I recommend it. It was a lot of fun, and I am not going to tell you if they succeed at their deletions. You're going to have to read the book and find out. And that is Murder Your Employer by Rupert Holmes.
Sweet. Is that the same Rupert Holmes that wrote the Pina Colada song? Also a couple of mystery plays?
Let me read his little biography in the back of the book.
He's been around for a while. Pina Colada.
He's born in 1947. I hate that song. It's like the song I hate more than any other song in the world.
He received two Edgar Awards from the Mystery Writers and multiple Tony and Drama Desk Awards for his Broadway mystery musical, including the book of Curtains, and his sole creation of the Tony Award-winning musical, The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Same guy. Yeah.
Yep.
I did that in high school.
Where the Lies Truth. Yeah.
Oh, see, he didn't have that song in his resume, because that's why he didn't have that song in his resume.
Yeah, he's written a lot of books.
All right.
Oh, it does. The last line is in his number one multi-platinum classic with a memorable twist ending, Escape, the Pina Colada song. But yes, song, Pat, same person. But it's really good.
I recognize that name.
It's really good. I recommend it. I think I saw it, of course, because the cover caught my eye, and then I was like, Murder Your Employer? Like, what? So, of course, I bought it, and it did not disappoint.
All right. Pat,
I'm taking us on a trip into horror land.
Yay!
Horrorland. Low-key horror. Yeah. Yeah. The book I read is called Dead 11 by Jimmy Giuliano. And it starts out with a woman named Willow Stone and her husband Dominic. They had a teenage son who was tragically killed in an accident. He was riding his like a scooter in the street and got run over and killed. About a year to 2 years before the events of the book start. And Willow in particular has had a real hard time moving on from this. She keeps his room exactly as it was the day that he died. And she goes in there and dusts everything and sits and like even makes the pictures hang a little crooked on the wall, because that was how he was not a super neat kid. So his pictures and posters weren't exactly straight. And so she keeps everything just the way it was. She was also a high school teacher, and apparently a very good and popular high school teacher, but she just can't deal with it anymore. She's left her job behind. The sorrow and the grief that she's caught up in are threatening the state of her marriage. She's really in a bad place. Well, one day she's in there cleaning her son's room, and she moves a chest, and she finds written on the floor under the chest the words Clifford Island. She's never heard of it. She's never heard her son mention this place. But this chest is apparently something that does not move very often in the room. And so she becomes pretty convinced that somehow he has left this as a message for her. And she looks up what Clifford Island is. First tip off that something's not right is that there is almost no information on Clifford Island other than the fact that it exists. It's a small island in Lake Michigan off of a peninsula in Wisconsin. And Willow decides to go to this island. We find out all of this stuff very, very early in the book. We also find out that after 5 weeks on Clifford Island, Willow disappeared and has not been heard from again.
Oh. Bye, Willow.
Yeah. Willow's brother, Harper, receives some letters from her, so he knows where she was, and he goes to Clifford Island to try and find out what happened to his sister. Is she dead? Is she missing? Was it an accident? Is she still alive somewhere? The most notably weird thing about Clifford Island, when Willow arrives and later when Harper arrives, they both pretty quickly notice that everyone on this island dresses, although the book is set contemporary, say 20, I think it came out last year, early 2020s, but everyone on this island dresses like it's 1990. And their music that they listen to is from the 90s. Things they watch on TV are from the 90s. And in fact, everybody, it seems, is obsessed with watching over and over again the coverage of O.J. Simpson and the White Bronco chase.
I mean, at least they're watching a good chase.
Oh, come on now.
Jeez. I can't be your friend anymore, Megan.
Hey, that was the highest pizza sales in like the history of Domino's that night.
So something is clearly weird on Clifford Island. It's stuck almost 30 years in the past. Willow gets hired pretty quickly and pretty easily to be the youth activities director for the local church, Clifford Island. She has a little bit of, well, and she says, a little bit of background. Well, I went to church when I was a kid, so I guess it was something about kids in church. But they pay her very well. She has relatively little skills, and the job is not very demanding at all because it's a very small population on Willow Island, and there aren't all that many kids. So this job is virtually handed to her. And you know, they are very into helping her get settled in, find her a place to stay. Pastor Rita, who runs the local church, is a very central woman in this community. She holds a lot of influence, and Willow gets the feeling that although Rita seems very kind and very welcoming, maybe you don't want to cross her. Besides the view, you see things from Willow's point of view as they happen, and you also get to read letters that she has written to Dominic, who went to Florida about the time that she decided to, or right after she picked up and went to Clifford Island. So you see her letters to Dominic, and you find out some of what she discovers through that. You see things through Harper's eyes as he comes to the island and looks around. You also see things from the point of view of Lily Becker, who is a teenager who has lived on this island all her life and has been subject to these weird restrictions that everybody seems to live by, and has been told that there's an important reason that things are this way, but Lily doesn't believe it. She just wants to get the hell out. She is a talented basketball player in her senior year of high school, and she has a good shot at getting a basketball scholarship to go away to a school, except things seem to keep happening to try and prevent that. She is also, when she's at a basketball game on the mainland, when they come in from the island, she meets a guy and they kind of hit it off. And so you're not supposed to have cell phones on the island. Cell phones are absolutely forbidden. But Lily,
yeah, because it's 1994,
right?
Yeah. Well, and so Lily has a secret cell phone, and she keeps in touch and her father has allowed this. Her father is part of the town government, but her father would like to see Lily get off the island. What's a real slow burn is finding out what the secrets are in this island, what's inside the big old kind of, what do they call it? The settlement house, something like that. It's not directly connected to the church, but it's sort of a building that the church owned that was a big old house, and now it's all boarded up and everybody gets creepy feelings around it. There are little bits of history that you get from strange occurrences that have happened both in the past of Clifford Island and in the past of two other neighboring islands that are just a little beyond Clifford, going out from the peninsula. Clifford's the first one you meet, and then there are these two smaller islands. And weird things have happened out there too. And it's a slow burn kind of horror book. Everything gets put together in pieces, but you really feel like you get to know these people. And there's a lot of detail. There's a lot of just good suspense in not the kind of nail biting, oh my God, what's going to happen next, but how is this all going to fit together? How does because there are a lot of moving pieces in this plot. And I think Jimmy Giuliano has done a wonderful job of keeping track of all of them and bringing them together. I would say there are two kinds of horror books. There are horror books that don't depend on anything supernatural, like Stephen King's Misery, say, where everything is entirely possible and could happen. And there are horror books, and I think it's the majority of horror books, where you have to agree to buy into something of a supernatural nature in order to enjoy the book. This is one of those. You are going to be asked to buy into something supernatural at some point. But there's also a lot of fascinating interaction amongst the characters and a lot of really interesting kind of scenes and pictures that make you think about how grief affects people, because I mean, something has obviously paralyzed the people of this island back in the 1990s. But Willow is in her own way paralyzed with grief. She's like the people on Clifford Island in that she's stuck at a point in her past and can't make herself move beyond it. So it's got some thoughtful sides to it, too. I did listen to the audiobook, which was well performed and used a multiple narrator cast, and all of them were very good. So that is Dead 11 by Jimmy Giuliano.
Cool.
I don't know if I want to be stuck on an island in 1994.
Yeah, that's a
or
little.
Or an island that thinks it's 1994.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a hard sell for me as well.
I don't. All the music I would have had was the New Kids on the Block.
No, thank you.
I'm not sure.
It was not a great year.
I was 19. I think I'd dig it.
Okay.
Shocker.
People hate it when I review the second in a series, but I'm going to do it.
I'm having deja vu. Did we not just have this conversation?
Yeah, we kind of did.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone listening at home.
Is that how we shouldn't do that?
Tally.
There's a really good reason why I'm doing it.
Uh-huh. Because you make the rules?
Because I want to.
Well, the first book was not that compelling. And since, well, this is my opinion, of course. First of all, I'm going to tell you what the book is. It's called The Hunter by Tana French. Now, Tana French has done some really great books in the Dublin Murder Squad series. And she started a new series called Cal Hooper Series, which she just began with a book called The Searcher, which I did read and I did like. But I didn't love it. It was a very, very... It's about a Chicago cop who moves to Ireland, basically sight unseen. He picks a house, buys a house in this little backwater, and retires from being a police officer. When I was reading this one, I couldn't even remember what happened in the first one. It just was not very memorable to me. But I did really like this one, and I wanted to tell you about it because it had such an effect on me when it comes to my favorite thing, which is traveling through books. And because St. Patrick's Day is coming up, listening to an Irish book really sort of fit the bill. Now, if you were to pick this up as a standalone, there's only one thing that would bug you about not reading the first one, and that is to find out what happened to this girl's brother, which wasn't even that big of a deal, in my opinion. But Cal strikes up a friendship with a local teenager, and he teaches her carpentry and whatnot. And so she's a big part of his life. And they have Trey's dad hasn't been at home for 4 years. He basically just took off and left the family. So the mother is taking care of the smaller children, and the older son has been killed in the earlier book. So daddy comes home. Basically, that's the plot that surrounds this first or this second book, because daddy, who is kind of a shit, shows up back at the house like nothing's wrong, you know, like he's been there all along. He just shows up for 4 years later. And he has a scheme up his sleeve. So he tells all of his local buddies that he's talked to this guy who is an investor into coming to the village to talk to them because he thinks there's gold in the area because his grandmother was from there. And he has this ring that she says that she found the gold there in Ireland. Well, Johnny, who is the dad, tells all of his buddies that, hey, we're going to make sure this guy finds gold. So you guys each have to give me a little bit of money. We'll get some gold and we'll plant it in the river in the place where he thinks it is so that he will then invest in the town. So it's just a bunch of these guys trying to pull one over on each other, basically. And Cal, of course, he's what they call a blow-in, which means that, of course, he's not from there. And so he's trying to stay out of it because he knows Trey's dad is a scammer. He can tell. But he also wants to kind of keep an eye on things. So he pretends to buy in, and they go throughout the thing. But it turns out to be a really, really good, suspenseful mystery because, of course, someone gets murdered. And Cal, who's a former police officer, kind of is involved, obviously, because he doesn't want Trey, who's the daughter, to get in trouble. But there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that really made it great. And the audiobook, the Irish accents are excellent, so it's a really good book to listen to this time of year. Now, if you're really going to be a stickler about it, fine. Go back and read The Searcher and then read The Hunter, which is a much better novel, in my opinion. You basically just could have told us a little backstory about the first murder and we would have been all good. I even went back and tried to listen to it again and realized that, no, this was way better. So, yeah, I know I'm a rule breaker, but what are you going to do about it? It's called The Hunter by Tana French.
Go. What are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it?
Do you know what today is?
What?
Martha?
What?
You should know what today is.
International Women's Day.
Women's Day.
Well, it's International Women's Day, but it's also Echo's adoption
anniversary. It's Echo's Gotcha Day.
Yeah. And you were there, so you should
I
know.
Was there.
You want to say it? Yeah. 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 She says, happy anniversary to me. Of course, you know, I didn't know until it came up on Facebook memories because I'm a sucky mom.
No, I hearted that this
morning. How many years ago did you get her?
5 years ago.
Doesn't seem like that long.
But also something else I was going to say.
What?
Is, you know, we got a new team lead because our other one is on maternity leave. And she's a reader. Her mom is a reader. She told her mom about the podcast.
What?
And her mom listened.
Woo!
Hi, Mom.
I know. Hi, Mom. Tony's mom has got it going on. And the most shocking thing for me, she is a Ken Follett fan.
Whoa.
I know. Now I'm going to have to share my locket of hair with somebody.
That's creepy, dude. It's so creepy. Hey, you want to see my locket of hair?
What?
It's from, wait, it's from, hold on. It's from Joe Hill's beard.
From his
chest. Wait, you
chest.
Have a locket of Ken no. Follett's hair?
No, no, no. It's a joke.
Oh, I was like, I don't want to hear any more shit about fangirling if you have a locket of this man's hair.
Do you want to see his used napkin?
I was about to have to defend my honor so hard.
No, no, no. I'm making it up.
We used to remember when we used to talk about collecting beard hair from Joe Hill or
no.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of this conversation.
You must have missed that. That, of course, that is really creepy. And no, I don't think I would
she
never
was,
do that.
I don't
that,
think she but... was on the podcast yet when we were talking about that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. This was before your time, Megan.
I'm going to need you to not do that.
Why?
It's weird.
You're saying that if Harry Styles dropped his napkin,
I
you
would
not,
pick
it up and keep it.
No.
You would too.
So you'd be like, I'm making a candle that smells just like
if
this.
If he signed a
he
said napkin.
He could wipe that all over his private parts and give it to you. And you
I don't
love
want
it.
That.
She'd be going,
no.
Musky.
He smells like his fingernail polish.
Oh, I hope not.
I have a candle like this at home.
The weird things people do
it
who are fans.
It still would smell better than Gwyneth Paltrow's candle.
How do you know? You've never smelled her pussy.
Exactly. I'm sure that Harry Styles' sweat towel would smell better.
I don't know.
She might have a very fruity smelling woohoo.
She better get that checked.
She might drink a lot of Yahoo for her woohoo.
Oh, no. No, no.
Maybe it smells like gummy nerds.
No, that's your fingers.
Well, now you know where my fingers are at. Just kidding.
Oh, my God.
Inside the gummy nerds bag. Come on, Megan. Get your,
get your
out
mind
of
out of the gutter.
I
am just excited to have another Ken Follett fan
that is
listening
pretty cool.
Because sometimes I feel like I'm the only one.
You're not the
only
one.
The only one on the planet.
There's a freaking statue to him in, is it Spain?
I know that cost me a freaking fortune. Just
so, so that's where all your money. So that's where all your money went to to put up the Ken Follett statue. Mm-hmm. You are a sick woman.
Well, if she's his only fan, she must have bought all those hundreds of thousands of books too.
I know. Bonnie's lying to all.
She's
of
always
us.
Bitching about that she's broke. So that's where
now
all the
you
money
know why.
Goes.
She's broke because actually... she spent it all on Ken Follett.
That's actually why she rebuys them from the library book sale because she feels pissed off that they're at the sale now.
And she's got some kind of weird side auction going for his personal items.
Mm-hmm. I have my own used napkins that I sell online.
Never.
Under another name.
No. No, no. We aren't this level.
Oh, we might be.
We are not.
You don't know what I do in my spare time.
You're right.
I don't think you really want to know either.
I also know that you don't like to leave your house. So,
or that's what I say. I'm going to go home and quote unquote true. Feed my dog.
Oh, so that's some kind of code?
I don't know what.
I'm
really,
scared.
I have Ken Follett locked in a cage.
Oh,
in my...
so that's why you need all those scent beads.
Yeah.
Write some more, you asshole! I'm not going to give you clean clothes yet.
I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with them when my mom moves in.
And that's going to do it for Three Book Girls.
If you made it this far, you are truly bookish. So go to Facebook and join your fellow book lovers on the Three Book Girls squad. Follow Three Book Girls on socials and be on the lookout for their next live event. Proud of their lack of shelf control, Three Book Girls is a Steel Trap production.